Jimmy Dura, host of All Things Veterinary, a podcast that connects and unites the animal health community with ideas and innovation, topics to inspire you and energize your day. Hello and welcome to another episode of the All Things Veterinary podcast. Today we will be joined by our guest, Les Metacroft, founder and CEO of Vetivation. Les, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Jimmy, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Likewise, we've been looking forward to having you on for a while now. And obviously our discussion today revolves around the topic of minimally invasive surgery. So to begin, I thought it would be great if you just share your history in the field, how you came to found the company of Vetivation, and who is Vetivation and what you guys do to get us kicked off here.
Awesome. Thank you. And great question. So the majority of my career was spent on the human side. So I was on the human side of medical device equipment for about 25 years. Started my career at a division of Johnson & Johnson called Ethicon Endosurgery. So they did laparoscopic surgery, they did stapling, they did vessel sealing technology, they did scoping. That was back in the days when laparoscopic cholecystectomy, the removal of a gallbladder, was kind of in its infancy. So we started doing the first surgeon training on how to put a laparoscope into a patient for a human, and really saw that technology become the standard of care in human medicine, which was really, really exciting to be a part of at Johnson & Johnson. And then I left J&J, went to this small startup company called Intuitive Surgical, which makes a device called the Da Vinci Surgical Robot, probably arguably the best technology in the world. It's amazing. They put a surgical robot over the patient. They put the doctor over in the corner of the room because that's where the console is. It's kind of like they're playing a fancy video game. Mm-hmm. And the movements of their hands get transferred over to the robot, which are inside the patient. And that technology evolved to become the standard of care for prostatectomy, for gynecologic oncology, for mitral valve and some other minimally invasive surgery procedures. So surgical robotics was awesome and a lot of fun. And then, you know, fast forward a few more years, had a problem with the dog, took my the dog that was our puppy before, as my wife and I got married, before we had kids, to the vet. And the vet said, you know, I feel something weird on their side, and did some blood work and then did an ultrasound, and fast forward said, you know, we think your dog's got a bad spleen and we need to take that spleen out. And I looked at my vet and I looked at the size of his hands, and I said, I don't know that I want you putting your hands inside my dog. You know, we love this dog, you know, and on the human side, we would have taken that spleen out laparoscopically through a couple of little incisions the size of my pinky. I, you know, called some friends over at NC State Vet School, you know, to see if they would do that. And then one thing led to another while I was on the human side, finding out that laparoscopy really wasn't a common thing in veterinary medicine. And then, you know, got this whim that, you know, wow, we should really transfer the technology that's the standard of care in human medicine over to the vet side. And fortunately, everything worked out really, really great. And I left my great job and great career on the human side to start what I've absolutely love is being able to train veterinarians on doing minimally invasive surgery and enabling them to do some really cool, fun stuff.
That is awesome. That's a really neat story and history. I feel like that's sort of how a lot of us ended up in the vet space, is that type of experience. So how long has it been since you founded Vetivation, and can you just kind of tell us a little bit more about you guys?
Yeah, so Vetivation was founded about 12 years ago to do basically to take human medical equipment that's been the standard of care in human medicine for the last 20, 25 years and bring it over to the vet side. And then our vision is really to improve the lives of our patients. So dogs, cats, we do some equine, we do a lot of exotics as well, to improve the lives of the patients that our equipment would be operated on, but then to elevate the standard of care for the veterinarian. So any place that we can help to make surgery better for that patient and make the standard of care better for that veterinarian, that's kind of our vision. And our expertise is really around scoping. So I jokingly say we have a scope for every orifice, whether it's a scope down the throat, a scope in the ear, a scope up the nose, if they don't have an orifice, every doctor has a 10 blade and they know how to use it. So we'll make an incision, we'll stick a trocar in, then they'll stick a scope in. So, you know, we're really good with scoping. We're really great with vessel sealing technology, orthopedic equipment and accessories around the orthopedic line. And then, you know, sterilization is a big part of what we do from the standpoint of a lot of that human equipment is disposable. And it's just not in the DNA of a veterinarian to throw that single patient use device away. It's really awesome if they can put it in a low temperature sterilizer, be able to re-sterilize it and use it multiple times. So I would say those are our expertise areas. And that's really our vision is to help the pet and then help the vet elevate the standard of care in veterinary medicine.
Well, you spoke our love language of multiple use opportunities, Les. That is for sure. Just to kind of get a baseline, can you describe, you know, what is minimally invasive surgery in your eyes and, you know, how you see that? Can you describe that for us?
Yeah, to put it into simple terms, a scope. So this is a version of a scope. This would be a laparoscope. A scope, in my view, becomes your eyes. Your vet knows their anatomy. But a lot of vets are kind of getting older like me and are relying on a pair of these. Jimmy, it's coming. It's going to hit you in a few years.
That's right.
That you'll get out of bed and you'll need that pair of glasses because you can't see as well. So a scope becomes your eyes. You can put that scope in an ear to be able to look at the tympanic membrane. You can put that scope up a nose where your eyes just can't go to be able to see the turbinates. You could put that scope in the abdomen to be able to see all the lobes of the liver, gallbladder, spleen, kidneys, bladder, anywhere you need to put that scope, it's going to become an extension of your eyes. And it's significantly smaller than your hands. And then you're going to put instruments through trocars. So this would be a trocar and this would be an instrument. You're going to slide that through there. And then this instrument that's, you know, about half of the size of my pinky is going to become an extension of your hand. So now you can grab something, you can retract it, you can move it around with the scope, you can see it. So minimally invasive surgery to me is just simply giving your eyes an ability to see things that they can't see, to magnify them substantially better than you could see it with your human eyes. And then to give yourself some instruments that become an extension of your hands to cut, coagulate, move things around, dissect, biopsy something, all of those things that are really, really great and less disruptive for that patient, because now you're not having to make a big incision. You're not having to cut a lot of tissue that doesn't need to be cut. You can see it better. You can remove it. You can do all the things that are going to improve the post-operative outcome for that patient.
Thank you for that. And you described earlier, you know, this has been the standard of care on the human side for decades at this point. Where would you say we are in veterinary medicine along the timeline of adopting this type of technology?
Yeah, I'd say it's following very similar adoption curves that we saw on the human side. Every specialty hospital, every academic center. So if you're a boarded surgeon that would, you know, go into soft tissue or be a boarded surgeon, you have to have a certain number of hours of scoping before you sit for your boards. So every University of Georgia, NC State, every academic center in the United States and probably around the world is all doing scoping. That's the standard of care. Every specialty hospital, they're all doing scoping. That's the standard of care, whether it's arthroscopy or laparoscopy. Every dermatologist is looking in ears, you know, with an otoscope to be able to clean out, flush out that ear. Probably every exotic boarded surgeon is going to, you know, have the ability to do scoping to remove things. Every internist is going to have a scope to go in a stomach and be able to biopsy the stomach or the duodenum to be able to remove a foreign body. And that's evolving down to the general practice area where the nicer general practices in every community in the United States, you know, there are definitely places that offer laparoscopy, offer endoscopy. And then you kind of evolve that into our world of veterinary medicine. Trick question, what's the unemployment rate in veterinary medicine today? If you're a DVM,
1%.
Yeah, I would guess 0.
I was trying not to be totally across the board perfect, but okay, yeah, there it is.
You know, 1%, zero, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
If you're a vet, you could probably find five jobs by noon today.
You're right. You're
so if you're that practice owner, how do you attract the really good vet that wants to work super hard, wants to do surgery, wants to advance veterinary medicine, wants to benefit the patient? So, you know, if you're that practice owner, you're probably investing in some cool equipment like this or cool equipment like that that enables them to do better surgery. And now that's a relatively low cost way to attract a really good associate. And the challenge is the other people down the road that might try to, you know, offer a good signing bonus or something like that. Now, if you've got it and that vet's doing it, once they've done it, they're not going to take a step back in their standard of care for that patient. So once they start doing laparoscopy or using a vessel sealer, they're not ever going to go back to the old-fashioned way of doing it. So now if you've got a young associate that gets really good at this, obviously you're going to generate revenue by having it. You're going to benefit your patients, which is a part of our mission. And that young associate's going to feel really great about doing it. Your staff's going to feel really great about doing it. And you're probably going to find patients coming to your hospital out of your normal call range. You know, patients will drive an hour, patients will drive 2 hours to be able to get minimally invasive surgery because ultimately they love their pet and they want the best for their pet.
1000% agree. I see it in the field frequently, those circumstances you're talking about for clinics that are doing some of these differentiated or more, I don't want to say specialized, but a little more technical type of procedure, no question. And your other point, I think, needs to be reiterated on the recruitment side. And you touched on, you know, some of these associates and in that same line, new grads coming out of vet school. You know, you mentioned these vet students are being taught utilizing or at least getting time on these types of pieces of equipment. What a great way for a general practice to have that, you know, ready and available when an extern comes through the door or, you know, word of mouth, that type of thing. That's a, like you said, a really inexpensive recruiting tool in that one.
Absolutely.
On that one hand.
So kind of cool story. I was recently at VMX, big veterinary conference, and, you know, had a bunch of different people throughout the meeting come up to me, and they were, you know, kind of young, relatively recent grads. And they were like, man, I use that vessel sealer. That thing is so fantastic. When I was a vet student, I did one spay and two neuters. Their surgical experience was just relatively low, and they were a little bit inexperienced. And this enabling technology, being a vessel sealer, they got thrown into a general practice environment where they pretty immediately had to do spays, had to do neuters, maybe were there if it was a small practice and hemoabdomen came in and got thrown into having to do like a splenectomy, which is a pretty big procedure. And they're like, wow, you know, if I didn't have that vessel sealer, my stress level went through the roof. And if the doctor's stressed, the tech in the room is probably stressed. And then they're getting stressed, and maybe there's a little bit of bleeding in that case. That stress is probably being added to, hey, go get the practice owner, pull him in here. He's probably in clinic seeing patients. And now he gets pulled out. So now the client who was seeing him is upset that their day is delayed. And now the office staff and the gal that's up at the front that's now having to tell people in the waiting room, oh, we're running behind because we had an emergency and we had to pull another vet off. But if you had a vessel sealer that is super easy to use, you basically clamp it on the tissue, you hit a button on the back, it's going to tell you when it's sealed that tissue that's in the jaws, and then the doctor's going to slide the blade. They no longer have to dissect out the tissue, dissect out the vessel, tie a knot, make sure that that knot is secure. It alleviates that fear of getting bleeding intraoperatively. It helps them sleep better at night because they're now not staying up at night. Hey, did my knot get tied? Is that patient going to have any post-op bleeding? This technology is fantastic and enables them to do surgeries a lot less stressful for the vet, and then, you know, significantly better for that patient.
That's a great story. If I was a vet and I was just reluctant and hesitant and maybe skeptical and less, I don't know, man. I don't know if this type of technology is for me. What do you say to a vet like that?
Yeah, I love that question. From the standpoint, you know, a lot of times they'll hit me with, I'm not a video game player. You know, I didn't grow up in the age of playing video games. And my response is, yeah, I don't care if you play video games. I want you to know your anatomy. And that older vet, man, they know from nose to tail the anatomy of their patient so well. And you just give me a second with them to show them the anatomy like an anatomy book. You know, you give them a scope that's going to magnify that times 30 and put that scope on top of anatomy that they already know, and then give them an instrument that's probably smaller than their pinky, and they're going to then turn into a kid in a candy store. They're going to be able to, oh my gosh, I remember this patient that was a 13-year-old lab, had elevated liver enzymes, and the owner, you know, Jimmy, I'm going to put you on the spot. Put your right hand up. I don't want your hands in my dog, right?
Fair
point. You got some big hands. So, you know, with that 13-year-old dog, could they put two teeny tiny little incisions smaller than half the size of a pencil into that dog? And now you can see all the lobes of their liver, and you can take a biopsy of one or multiple lobes of that liver that's about the size of the tip of your pinky. And then diagnostically and therapeutically, you get a significantly better sample of that tissue, and you can treat that dog better. And it's a 13-year-old lab that would probably have a pretty significant recovery from putting Jimmy's hands in there. Now that dog, it's almost like a mosquito bite for that dog. They've got no recovery. They're, you know, that afternoon when they're going home, they're pulling on the leash, they're jumping in the backseat of the car. The recovery is almost zero for them. So for that doctor that says, you know, I'm worried about this equipment, it's new technology, I'm uncertain about it, I say, doctor, you know your anatomy. I'm simply going to show you your anatomy like an anatomy book, and the rest of it will take over. And they love it. They absolutely love it. And it enables them to do things that they weren't able to do before. And it becomes a lot of fun.
That's a great response. And you're 1,000%. You're comfortable. If you're comfortable with the anatomy, that's all I need you to be from here on out. And having the wisdom or experience maybe of an older vet or has a couple of decades under their belt, you get that in their hands and maybe a new grad around them. And what a great combo team to like adopt something like this and stepping maybe slightly out of the comfort zone initially. But, you know, you're touching on something I want to further kind of bring up that we've kind of hashed out on the podcast before. And that's the pet owner demand that's also driving these types of services and technologies through clinics. I mean, we're just in a wonderful place. And like you said, post-op, real life, a lot of times that cone, the cone's coming off, not even by the time the pet owner gets the dog to the house. And then the kid comes in, doesn't know the program, wants to take the dog for a walk, going in the dirty backyard. It's like pet owners are wanting these types of, you know, we're in a better position for them to receive and pay for these types of procedures to allow for that better outcome. So along those lines, Les, would you also, you know, as we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of these types of procedures, would you kind of go through some more benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say it's been the standard of care in human medicine for 25 years. So if you had your gallbladder taken out, if your child, you know, had to have an ear, you know, tubes put in their ears, we know minimally invasive surgery because we've had it ourselves, or our wife has had it, or our child has had it, our family member has had it. So when you show up at the vet and the vet says, hey, we're going to cut your dog open and this is how we're going to do it, they may not say it because I think they're being polite. Why are you going to have to cut my dog open to do what, if I was a human, I would expect, you know, would absolutely happen for my child, for my spouse, for my cousin, for my aunt, my uncle, my brother. So I think a dog owner or animal owners are expecting minimally invasive surgery. And in many instances, they'll seek it out. You know, the world of Google and being able to do a search, if that practice is offering minimally invasive surgery, they're going to find clients coming there from an hour away, 3 hours away, states away, and obviously they're going to be willing to pay a premium if they're willing to travel. So I see it being super beneficial for the practice. I see it being really, really beneficial for the pet. I use this analogy all the time, and it's kind of a funny one. If your wife had to have surgery, that their surgeon is going to say, okay, you need to be on bed rest for 3 or 4 days. Don't lift anything heavy for a couple of days. Don't lick your incision. Don't roll in the mud. Don't chase the cat, you know, and your wife's going to listen to about half of that. She's probably getting out of bed. She's probably picking up stuff. She's probably, you know, running around doing, you know, you got kids to care for and all that kind of stuff. But your veterinarian, I don't care how good they are, they look at that dog and say, don't lick your incision, don't chase the cat, don't run around, don't roll in the mud, you know, give them an e-collar, sure. The dog's going to listen to none of that. And they're immediately, as they get home, they're going to chase the cat, they're going to chase the kids, they're going to jump up and down, they're probably going to try to lick their incision. So, you know, if you can do it in a minimally invasive fashion through a couple of incisions, probably smaller than my pinky, you eliminate all of that disruption. That dog can run around. That dog can jump up and down. That dog is not going to get infections. That dog is not going to have a wound dehiscence where the incision pulls itself apart. You know, so that dog can be a normal dog. And, you know, most people have to go back to work. They can't take off 3 or 4 days to watch their pet like you might do for your wife or a spouse. So, you know, it's a great win for the pet. And it's a great win for the pet owner.
No question. Can you kind of delve into some maybe specific procedures that this equipment's used on, you know, normal everyday things that clinics are currently doing, as well as maybe this opens up a door for some procedures that they didn't want to do without this equipment?
Absolutely. You know, so every practice in the United States is seeing dogs with ear problems. If you're on the West Coast, you're probably seeing dogs with ear problems, and you're probably seeing foxtails. So those beautiful foxtails get stuck in a lot of different places. You know, we've all got a smartphone in our pocket. We know how to use it. We know how to take pictures. We know how to take videos. We know how to email those off to people. You know, so the simplest, most basic thing is attaching your smartphone to a scope that has a lumen through the middle of the scope to be able to look in a dog's ear, look up a nose, be able to put a grasper through the lumen of that scope to be able to pull out hair, wax, debris, to be able to flush that area out, to be able to pull out a foxtail. And it's technology that they know how to use because it's their iPhone or their smartphone. It's anatomy that they know. They've looked into an ear their entire career. And now you're enabling them to treat that ear better and resolve itself and not have, you know, recurrent ear infections and problems and things like that. So I would say ears is a great place for our technology. You know, a lot of dogs just eat stuff. You know, the kid's eating breakfast and he throws the pacifier off the table and the dog eats up the pacifier. You know, you can take a gastroscope down the throat, into the stomach. You can grab that foreign body that the dog wasn't supposed to eat to begin with, and you can pull it out versus, once again, not to call you out on the size of your hands, but, you know, versus that doctor having to do a laparotomy, open that dog up, pull that foreign body out, recover that dog, have the staff in the hospital have to deal now with that laparotomy, relatively big surgery patient, and then the owner have to deal with that. Now you can go in with a scope, you can pull out that foreign body. It's probably a 15 to 20 minute surgical procedure, and you can enable that dog to go home. They don't even look like they did anything wrong. They have absolutely no guilt over, you know, eating that foreign body and having to go to the vet and disrupt the owner's day with that. But, you know, endoscopy is a super common thing that we do along with otoscopy. And then, you know, a lot of this is really enabling technology. So, you know, a lot of people like to get these cute, adorable Frenchies that, you know, unfortunately just can't breathe very well. And we can argue a lot of things, SEC versus ACC, or, you know, take it to the Super Bowl coming up. You know, you want one team or you want the other team. We cannot argue oxygen is good. right? So you take that little Frenchie that just can't breathe, and you take that throughout their life, it's going to make them lethargic. It's going to make them not be able to breathe, you know, sleep well at night. It's going to get them kicked out of the bedroom because they're snoring. It's going to lead to diabetes. It's going to lead to, you know, obesity and all these problems, where if they had enabling technology like a vessel sealer that could, at the time of a spay or neuter, go in the back of the throat, remove that soft palate, and open that airway up so now that patient can breathe, and you could do that in 30 seconds, now you're benefiting that patient for the lifetime of that patient. Take it to another area around a large breed dog. I mean, these are beautiful, gorgeous dogs that are, you know, just large breed and sometimes a little bit on the hyper side. So you leave that dog at home all day, you go off to work, and that dog gets in the garbage can, they're going to eat everything in that garbage can. And they're going to then potentially have a bloat. And if they're a large breed dog, that bloat could lead to a torsion of their stomach, where their stomach turns onto itself and it's going to cut off the blood supply. It's very painful for the pet, very traumatic for the owner when you pull in, put the garage door up, and you see your dog there laying on the ground and is really, really sick. Now that would become a very urgent surgery, where at the time of a spay or a neuter, if you could do it in a minimally invasive fashion, you could do a prophylactic gastropexy, where you tack that stomach to the abdominal wall, you do it through a teeny tiny little incision, and now you've protected that patient from having that torsion of their stomach for the life of that patient, which is really just fantastic. And it's an easy thing for that general practice vet to be able to do. And it's a really, really beneficial thing for that patient.
Those are really great examples. A couple things that jumped to mind when you were going through those is, you know, back to the ear scope. I mean, what a really neat tool also to maybe incorporate the pet owner in the exam room and see the problem that's going on right from your phone, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get eyes on the nastiness that is inside a dog's ear as a pet owner, you're probably going to be a lot more ready to listen to the doctor's instructions on how to prevent this again and how, you know, how bad it's gotten, you know? So that's a great tool in the exam room as well.
Really helps that, you know, the vet get the owner involved in the care for the patient. If they can see that really nasty, dirty ear and how bad that is and how compacted it is on top of the tympanic membrane or the eardrum, then hopefully when they get it cleaned out, flushed out, and get it back to normal, the owner is then going to have seen those bad pictures and know, you know, I really got to clean out that dog's ear a little bit more frequently. And, you know, let's flush it and let's keep it clean, because no one wins if that dog ends up getting a tika. A tika is where they, you know, basically remove all that stuff in the ear, the dog loses the ability to hear. And that's a huge loss for that dog. And it's a really invasive procedure. If we can get that ear clean and we can flush out that ethmoid area, that tympanic membrane is going to regrow. That dog is going to be a significantly happier dog and a significantly more healthy pet. So something as basic as just cleaning out ears and sharing that image with the owner is really critical.
For sure. And the other thing is, man, I wish we could start a trend in our hospitals of like shadow boxes aligning the surgical suite of all the foreign bodies and objects that have come out of all of our patients.
So probably my two favorite texts to get, and this comes usually on a Friday night or a Saturday night, sometimes Sunday night. You know, I'll get a text from a vet that we, you know, gotten an endoscope to, or we've gotten a vessel sealer to, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, I just pulled this out. And you'll see this nasty stuff on the back table of, you know, sometimes it's old socks, and, you know, sometimes it's hair ties. You'll see a half dozen hair ties. You know, sometimes you'll see a fish hook. You know, obviously that's a great thing not to have left in your pet. And then the other one is, it's kind of like they're fishing. They'll be like, look at this spleen. I just got this suite out in 15 minutes and it's a Saturday night and they weren't wanting to be in the hospital. And, you know, it's like they just caught the big fish and they want to mount it up on the wall. You know, they're sending me a picture of this. I got this spleen out. It took me longer to close the skin than to get the spleen out. And you're like, yeah, that is awesome. So I get super fired up when I get those text messages. And usually my daughter's not a huge fan of blood and gore. So I'll, you know, my wife's sitting next to me on the couch watching a movie or whatever. And I'll be like, hey, look what I just, you know, some vet somewhere just did. And, you know, if my daughter gets wind of it, she's like, Dad, don't show me that. So it's always, those are super rewarding for me and a lot of fun to see what this enabling technology, you know, helps a vet be able to do.
You know, I'd love for you just to run through, we've talked about a few, you know, otoscopy, endoscopy, laparoscopy, cystoscopy, all the oscopies just that we can do. I'd love to go ahead and dive in to help, you know, give some tips on how a clinic can get started if they have shown in, just kind of move through that cycle, if you will.
Yeah. So VetOvation, they can start really small or they can go big or anywhere in between. You know, we have scopes that attach to an iPhone that's really low cost, under a couple of $1,000, enables them to be able to treat ears better, be able to go into a nose and treat, you know, issues that might be going on in, within that nose really, really well. You know, they can take that a step up to being able to do endoscopy with a flexible scope. They can go into the abdomen, they could go into a joint. If they just wanted a vessel sealer, you know, we can enable them with just a simple vessel sealer. I think the beauty of Patterson is you've got reps all over the country. They're super knowledgeable. They're a great resource to that practice owner or the associates in that practice. And they've probably got experience seeing this at another hospital. So, you know, ask your Patterson rep, hey, what do you know about vessel sealing or what do you know about scoping? Because they've probably seen it at another hospital and they can say, oh yeah, I saw that at Care First Animal Hospital up the road. And, you know, they use it to treat ears. They use it to treat noses. They've got a vessel sealer that helps a young associate. And then let me get you in touch with VetOvation and, you know, somebody from our team can jump on the phone with them along with their territory manager and talk through, hey, this is how you would evaluate this equipment in your hospital. This is how you would get trained on this equipment in your hospital. And this is how it would benefit them. I will, you know, sort of boast a little bit. I think the training that we do in the hospital is the best training in veterinary medicine. I think we have a way of doing it that helps them to make it the standard of care. And I do believe that that's better than anybody else that does it. I take a lot of pride in that.
Well, it shows based on what I've seen firsthand and a lot of our team for sure. So, you know, as we kind of start to wrap up, Les, I'd love to jump and just, okay, you've got a clinic, they've adopted this new technology or a couple pieces of equipment or what have you. What advice would you have to those new hospitals as a way to get the word out to their clients and the community? Like what are some best practices there?
Absolutely. So VetOvation provides them a lot of resources that they should utilize. And it all comes along with the equipment. So a patient education brochure, all these general practices are going to use this technology for a spay. So we call a spay a love spay. So love stands for laparoscopic ovariectomy, L-O-V-E. There was a wonderful clinical study that was done quite a few years ago that compared a laparoscopic spay to a traditional spay. A love spay is 65% less pain in comparison to a traditional spay. So the brochure that the practice will get has their logo on it, has their colors, hospital, you know, colors and theme on it. So, you know, get that brochure. Put the brochure in your waiting room, hand out the brochure in your puppy packs, put that brochure on your website. You know, clients are very smart. They're going out to Google and they're searching this information. We'll give you a foundation with the keywords and the terminology so you don't have to recreate the wheel, but put on your practice website, hey, we offer laparoscopic spays, laparoscopic gastropexies, liver biopsies, otoscopy, rhinoscopy, endoscopy, because most clients are searching out in their community who offers what, and they're pretty smart. They're going to go to the place that offers the thing that they would want to provide the best care for their pet, and they're willing to travel. So, you know, absolutely get the brochures, have those in your waiting room, educate your staff. So when a client calls the hospital and says, hey, we got a new puppy and we're thinking about coming in, you know, that staff person says, oh yeah, you should definitely come here because we do laparoscopic spays and we call it the love spay, and it's significantly less invasive than a traditional spay, and your dog's going to recover faster. That enthusiasm from the person on the phone saying that we do something different and we do something better is going to get that client coming in the door and is going to set the impression for that client to then stay for the next 10 years and be a great client for that hospital, and a great win-win for both the client and the pet and the owner of the hospital.
I love that. Thank you. And no better marketing tool than a happy pet owner who's gotten something really neat and they're excited about it. That's the best advertising out there. And this is a kind of differentiated service that they're going to want to tell their friends. We're in that environment that these things are discussed, you know?
Yeah. A lot of us love or hate social media. But, right. You know, absolutely. If they pull out a foreign body out of that dog, they should take a picture of that and the dog, you know, with the consent of the owner, you know, but they should put that out on social media and tell their community, hey, we do something that maybe the other practices down the road don't do. So if you end up in a situation with a dog that has a foreign body, come to us because we'll take it out in a less invasive fashion. And then, you know, for that practice that is doing laparoscopy, you know, share that on social media. Your clients are very smart and they're reading some of those posts. And then if their vet doesn't offer it, they're probably going to come see you and have you treat their dog's ear. Have you do a laparoscopic liver biopsy for that older dog that's having some issues and needs it, and you turned it down from your vet that said, yeah, we're going to cut them open. I'm going to put my hands in there. I'm going to do a true cut biopsy. And, you know, if you can do it in a minimally invasive fashion and they saw that via social media, they're probably going to come to your hospital and ask you to help intervene in the situation that they've got with their pet.
Absolutely. Well, Les, this has been a fantastic discussion. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and valuable insights that you've seen over your career and what you guys are doing every day out there. So thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome. Well, you're very welcome. And thank you so much to your team at Patterson. You guys have enabled the adoption of this technology so much better than if we didn't have Patterson. All the things that the Patterson folks do by going to so many veterinary conferences where you talk about this equipment, doing the GPS programs where you're helping people fulfill their dreams of opening a practice and enabling them to open those practices with cool technology. And then, you know, just day in and day out, being a resource for, you know, the practice owners, the office managers, the staff there, to be the expert, because you're probably walking through 10 practices in a day and you're seeing what all those practices do really, really well. And then now when that practice owner asks you, hey, how does somebody else do something? You've got that wealth of knowledge that gives them the solution that they need, and you can share what you saw down the road and give them that. So thanks to all the great things that Patterson and the team does, because you got some really great people and you're really helping to benefit veterinary medicine by your expertise.
Well, thank you, Les. And last mention is we will put a link to in our show notes of this episode to your website where cool. Folks can learn more as well as access some of those videos you were describing. So thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for listening. Join us for more ideas and inspiration on the next All Things Veterinary podcast.